Chapter 19. Leia watched the Force Pike duel play out on screen, the image bright in her darkened office. Ransom stood by her side, and although he was obviously attempting to be modest, she could almost feel self-satisfaction radiating from him. But if he could fight like that, Ransom had every reason for pride. As the recording of the duel ended, Leia looked up at him over her shoulder. "I'm glad we're on the same side." He couldn't entirely suppress his smile. "Now you know how I felt when I saw you taking down Jabba the Hutt." Even though they'd each arrived on Hosnian Prime late at night, they'd wanted to meet at once. The Senate buildings were closest to the hangar they both used, so her office it was. Despite the urgency, Leia had been famished and eager for something besides the rations aboard the Mirrorbright, so she'd stopped at a takeout Ivaru Jari place for some boxes of spicy noodles. Ransom had turned out to be a fan of Ivaru Jari cuisine as well, so they'd turned her office desk into a sort of picnic table, eating while they worked by the light of a few candle droids. Each of them wore simple traveling clothes in gray or tan, and Ransom hadn't bothered wearing his usual sweeping cloak. All of the useless pomposity of the Galactic Senate had been swept away, leaving her and Ransom to get down to real work. The Imaxine warriors trust you. They even think they've recruited you. Leia picked up her box of noodles. We have to use that. Ransom took his seat again.
Agreed. But how and when? If we move too quickly, they'll become suspicious.
The timing of all this confused Leia nearly as much as it intrigued her. When you met with the Imaxine warriors, they were confident, even triumphant. But Rinriven Dai had traveled to a world where he's almost entirely separated from his criminal activities, and the napkin bombing made him angry. He prides himself on keeping his temper, but this got to him.
You mean you believe the Imaxine warriors and Rinriven Dai are at odds? We were so sure they were conspirators.
The two aren't mutually exclusive. The various bits of intel they'd gathered swirled around in her thoughts like moths. Leia had to pull together the strings of the plot, to weave a cobweb that would catch them all in their proper places. We know Rinriven Dai's cartel is connected to the Imaxine warriors. Either the Imaxine warriors set Rinriven up in the first place, or the same entity is funding them both. Ransom weighed her words, utensil and noodle box in his hands.
The napkin bombing affected each in different ways. The Imaxine warriors were emboldened, while Rinriven felt threatened. Do you believe the Imaxine warriors themselves were responsible?
The timing is right. And it feels right. Leia could sense herself being tugged in that direction as surely as a compass needle was pulled by a magnetic pole. Still, she needed to back up her instincts with logic. But what did the Imaxine warriors have to gain by the bombing? And why go to the trouble of planting a bomb and then warning the victims when they didn't even claim responsibility? They risk exposure even though they want to stay hidden.
Hidden for now, Ransom interjected. I doubt Hadrosian would have gone to the trouble of luring me to Daxam 4 had she not envisioned finding other allies in the Senate for her group, and soon. Still, even if the Imaxine warriors are nearly ready to emerge, I can't think what they had to gain by the bombing. The only result has been property damage and a great deal of confusion. The strands came together, weaving their cobweb pattern at last. Leia sat up straight.
That's it. Confusion. That's what they were after.
Ransom swallowed. What do you mean?
Our investigation of Rinriven Dai was official, public. The Imaxine warriors would have been watching closely from the beginning. Rinriven tried to bribe me into complacency on Bastatha, and he failed.
He was catching on, nodding as he said, It was no coincidence we first saw Hadrasian on Bastatha. She was there to watch us, maybe to orchestrate Rinriven's kidnapping attempt.
Exactly. Then you and I addressed the Senate jointly, a populist and a centrist.
Even though we could hardly get anyone to listen, we were both publicly pushing for a wider investigation. Finally, word gets out that I'm probably going to be the populist candidate for first senator, which would give me the authority to get to the bottom of this in no time. Leia attempted to imagine herself as Arlys Hadrosian, an imperial loyalist watching a hero of the rebellion on the brink of taking power. They needed a distraction, something that would paralyze the Senate completely. And they sure got one.
It would explain Rin Riven's anger as well.
Ransom leaned forward, one forearm on her desk. His cartel only thrives if it remains hidden. If the napkin bombing is linked to the Amaxine warriors, Rin Riven will be dragged into the light along with them. She breathed a sigh of both relief and resignation. I think we've hit on the strongest possible suspect. The question is, how do we prove it? Until this point, Ransom had been completely with her. But now his gaze drifted down to the table, awkward or ashamed. Leia couldn't understand his reaction until he quietly said, "We also have to know whether the Amaxine warriors have help. The ties to centrist worlds could be coincidental, but perhaps not. If anyone in my own faction is abetting this kind of violence, we must be the ones to expose them." Leia took care with her next words. "So, I try to steer the official investigation into the bombing in the right direction, while you make sure no centrist senator is involved." She could not show any suspicion of the centrists herself, not without solid proof. If she did so, Ransom's defensiveness might take over. He put integrity over party loyalty. She knew that about him now. But she also knew how easily his pride could be bruised. Her words had been well chosen, because Ransom nodded.
"A good plan. In the meanwhile, I take it, we both find out as much as we can about this mysterious planet that's so important to both the Amaxine warriors and Rin Riven Dai."
"Exactly," Leia said. "Soon, we'll need to find out what's on Cybensko.
What or who?"
Several centrist senators were avid acquirers of Imperial artifacts. Ransom's collection was far from the most impressive in the Senate offices. However, a mask of the Emperor's Royal Guard would be considered a prize by anyone in collecting circles. That gave Ransom an excuse to throw a party. A reception, really. Ransom supposed a gathering of a few dozen or so senators in his own office hardly counted as a party. A few glasses of Corellian brandy passed around while people looked at historical artifacts. That didn't live up to the wild indulgence of Hosnian Prime's most famous hosts, such as Varish Vickley. But it served Ransom's purpose, bringing a good 30 centrist senators together and loosening their tongues.
"Like new," said gray-haired Senator Opalin of Kuat, with great satisfaction.
He held his second glass of brandy in one hand.
"I remember seeing the Royal Guard in person once when I visited Coruscant. Imagine how imposing this looked in life."
Ransom murmured the right things while noting,
"Visited Coruscant during Imperial rule. Got close enough to Palpatine to see the Royal Guard." "His connections to the Empire have to have been stronger than he publicly admits."
Senator Fatil of Arinda, a blonde woman roughly Ransom's own age, wasn't content with admiring the helmet. She had to inspect and praise every single item in his collection.
"Even the uniforms suggest power," she murmured, standing very close to Ransom as she traced her fingers over a TIE pilot's black mask.
"They command respect."
"Awe. Submission.
She wants to either bring back the Empire or take me to bed," Ransom thought. "Possibly both."
The brandy continued to flow, and conversation became more candid.
"You didn't hear so much complaining in those days. Worlds knew they were responsible for their own messes. Didn't come whining to the Emperor about every little cyclone or drought."
"The academies on populist worlds, they've become jokes.
poor imitations of what the academies were like a generation ago, where the best and brightest trained to serve their leader. Now, on centrist worlds, we're rebuilding the old programs of study, re-establishing standards. About time, too.
If the will of the galaxy were truly so anti-Empire, there's no way so much of the Imperial fleet could have escaped. No way they wouldn't have been hunted down, no matter where they tried to hide. There are still friends of the Empire out there.
To this day, they've never adequately explained what happened to the first Death Star. Yes, we all know the big story, Luke Skywalker, single starfighter, blah blah blah, but honestly, does that sound credible to you? The Empire had the greatest engineers in the galaxy, and the Death Star was their finest achievement. There's no way it could have been vulnerable to that kind of attack. The Emperor had to have been betrayed by someone on the inside.
Ransom heard nothing that pointed directly to the Amaxine warriors, or any general knowledge of a pro-Empire militia. If any of these senators were linked to Hadrasian's organization, they were too clever to speak of it, even indirectly, even when slightly drunk. Yet what he heard troubled him even more. These people, his political allies, weren't merely interested in greater centralization and efficiency. They waxed nostalgic for the Empire itself. For Palpatine. For the fear and obedience planets showed in the aftermath of Alderaan's destruction. The worst aspects of the Empire, the very things Ransom hoped to wipe away in a new order, were the elements of control these people most wanted to bring back. One man, who served as chief of staff for Lady Carice Sindian, even said,
Lord Vader was nearly a second emperor. One totally loyal to Palpatine, yet capable of exercising ultimate authority in his own right. Can you imagine any leader today commanding such obedience?
Ransom turned as if to refill his own glass, because he knew he could not disguise the contempt on his face. To talk about Vader as if he were admirable. To praise the way Vader followed orders, even when those orders were to work people to death in his factories while their starving children watched. He took a deep breath, composed himself, and returned to the gathering with a smile on his face. The small hypocrisies of politics had to be mastered. Once everyone had departed and the cleaning droids were hard at work, Ransom sat at his desk for a while, staring at his collection. It looked so handsome now with the red Royal Guard mask at the center of the far wall. He'd worked for years to bring all the pieces together, and he still felt proud of them. But he was no longer proud to be counted among the others who valued these artifacts. To him, the Imperial relics stood for strength. To the others, they stood for domination.
At last...
Lady Carice thought as the cloth of gold mantle was settled on her shoulders.
At last, I have a title of my own.
She knelt in the great hall of Beeren, at the head of a crowd of hundreds before their arbiter. After weeks of ritual and ceremony, she was finally being given the symbolic tokens of leadership, mantle and scepter, to show that she would both shelter and defend her people. In spirit, at least. Lady Carice had no intention of removing herself from the central position of the Galactic Senate to administrate on a backwater world like Beeren. But the Beerenese didn't expect her to. In fact, they seemed to regard the ceremonies almost as a nuisance. Insolent, she thought, but irrelevant. When she strode through the great hall with the mantle on her shoulders and the scepter in her hands, applause rang out. And the new governor had finally completed her rituals. She had planned a grand fete for the evening with plenty of fireworks and music, and she intended to arrive in style.
No need to do this today, m'lady governor.
The warden of the treasures was a stout woman of middle years, respectful but puzzled by Lady Carice's insistence.
You've plenty of time to go through Lord Mellowin's things.
The ball doesn't begin for another few hours.
Lady Carice's shoulders ached under the weight of the mantle.
We might as well begin.
With resignation, the warden consented,
switching all the locks to align with Lady Carice's fingerprints and retinal scans. The older woman bowed as she backed out, leaving Lady Carice alone. Leaning forward, Lady Carice let the scanners check her eyes and her hands, though impatience made it hard for her to stand still. Biren's connections to the elder houses went back for centuries. Who knew what priceless items awaited inside? She wouldn't have taken any of them away from Biren. She took her role as governor seriously, and would not have abandoned her honor for a few jewels or a little gold. But she could use any of these things while on this world. If there were an exceptionally alluring gemstone necklace, or a sparkling tiara here in the chamber, wouldn't it be a shame to let them sit neglected when she could instead wear them tonight? Heavy gears turned and clicked within the enormous lock, whining like whale song. The tall bronze doors swung open at last, and in the darkness only vague shapes could be seen. Enthralled, Lady Carice motioned the candle droids forward, dashed in after them, and stopped.
This is it?
The treasures of Biren added up to no more than a couple of moldering old chests, some gilded furnishings that had seen better days, three or four obsolete droids waiting to be reawakened, and a few bits of jewelry that had more shine than substance. Lady Carice picked up one of the bracelets, sniffed, and let it fall again. So much for her hopes of grandeur. Annoyed and bored, with nothing to do until she readied herself for the ball, Lady Carice began poking around amid the treasures, trying to guess why any of it would have been kept. Did the droids have sentimental value, perhaps? Did someone think that atrocious style of furniture would come back into fashion? Not likely, in her opinion. Just when she began to think she might as well leave, she lifted a carved wooden box and saw that it had been engraved, "For Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan." Lady Carice perked up. Lord Mellowin must have wanted to give some sort of present to his successor, whom he would have assumed would be Princess Leia. By delivering this box to the princess, Lady Carice would fulfill her sacred duty as governor, and perhaps finally win some respect from Leia. It was about time. And if there happened to be jewelry in there worth the wearing, well, the princess wouldn't mind if Lady Carice borrowed it just once, for a special occasion. She sat in one of the gilded chairs and opened the box. Wrinkling her nose, she began to paw through the useless things there. A tiny doll no taller than her hand. A small, soft blanket of fine gillendown. A hexagonal, mirrored music box. A ring sized for a tiny finger. And a lock of dark brown hair tied at either end with ribbon. These were childhood mementos, no more. So much for the jewelry. But after taking a moment to think it over, Lady Carice decided this was even better. Princess Leia would no doubt become emotional upon receiving these. She would be even more grateful to Lady Carice. Yes, this would work very well. Idly, Lady Carice picked up the music box and opened it. She recognized the song immediately. It was a traditional Alderaanian lullaby, one Carice's grandmother had sung when she felt sentimental about her homeworld. The words welled in her memory. "Mirror bright shines the moon, its glow as soft as an ember. When the moon is mirror bright, take this time to remember. Those you have loved but are gone, those who kept you so safe and warm, the mirror bright moon lets you see those who have ceased to be. Mirror bright shines the moon as fires die to their embers. Those you loved are with you still. The moon will help you remember." It was a sadder song than Lady Carice had realized. What a thing to sing to children. Nor had Alderaan ever had a moon. Probably it was symbolic, she thought. Poetic, the sort of nonsense Alderaanians put so much stock in. The music dropped slightly in volume, which usually meant a voice would start singing along. But instead, A man began speaking.
My beloved daughter, the Supreme Governor of Beeren, whom I trust completely, said that he would keep this here for you when you someday inherit this title. My hope is that this recording contains no new information, that I have had the chance to explain everything to you myself.
Lady Carice realized the speaker could only be Bail Organa. She covered her mouth with her hand, eyes wide, as she listened to the voice of a man now dead nearly 30 years, speaking for his daughter's ears only.
However, I make this recording during a time of increasing danger for our rebellion. I know too well that I may not survive the war that is surely to come. By hiding the information here, on a world of no significance to the Empire, I hope to keep it out of the wrong hands and deliver it into yours. For this is knowledge you, and only you, have the right to possess.
Probably he would now start going on about war secrets, no longer secret, about a war that had ended decades ago. Lady Carice rolled her eyes, deciding Princess Leia would probably like this even more. She loved nothing so much as reminding the galaxy what a great war hero she'd been. A recording like this from her father would be marvelous propaganda fodder. How long before it was played for the public as part of Princess Leia's campaign to be first senator?
You've never expressed much interest in knowing about your birth parents. So many times you've told your mother and me we are the only father and mother you've ever needed. And never doubt how much that means to us both. But Leia, the story of your origin is one you must know. You were hidden with us for your own safety and for that of your brother. Yes, you have a twin brother, though you must not seek him until the war has ended, and both Palpatine and Lord Vader have been defeated.
Princess Leia's brother was the Jedi Luke Skywalker. Why would Bail Organa have forbidden his daughter to seek Skywalker out? And what was this mysterious origin story? Lady Carice leaned closer, and the glinting light from the mirrored surface of the music box reflected on her face.
Obi-Wan Kenobi took your brother for safekeeping, and I took you. We hid you both from each other and from your father, who could not know that any child of his had been born alive. You see, Leia, I always told you the truth about your mother and how she died. But I never told you that she was Padme Amidala, former queen and senator of the planet Naboo.
A war orphan? And yet a royal by birth? Surprised as Lady Carice was, she decided that made sense. Leia's nobility was indeed in her blood. But Bail Organa continued,
Nor could I share that your father was Anakin Skywalker, one of the last Jedi Knights and a great hero of the Clone Wars. But now I must tell you the worst, and you must be strong. I must tell you what became of Anakin Skywalker.
Lady Carice's hand gripped the music box more tightly as she listened to the next few seconds, her astonishment coalescing into dread as Bail Organa spelled out the entire truth of a man's descent into darkness. And yet she was unprepared for the moment she heard the words,
Your father has become Darth Vader.
She snapped the music box shut, silencing Organa's voice. Then she dropped the music box back in the small chest, after which she shut it too. Lady Carice put the chest on the floor, kicked it farther from her, decided that wasn't far enough, and got out of her chair to back away from the thing, until her shoulder blades collided with the chamber's stone wall. Dazed, almost faint, she kept staring at the small wooden chest that held a secret with the power to change the course of the galaxy. Darth Vader was the father of Princess Leia. Of Luke Skywalker, too, but this detail was nearly irrelevant to Lady Carice. Skywalker had been so long away on his strange quest for the lore of the Jedi that he no longer had much influence outside his own acolytes.
He was a figure of myth more than one of flesh and blood. Princess Leia, however, she had power. If she were elected first senator, she would become the ultimate authority in the entire galaxy. But the child of a figure so widely hated as Darth Vader could never win that election. Lady Carice realized she had been given the one thing that could ensure victory for the centrists. The untouchable, unimpeachable heroine, Leia Organa, could be toppled off her pedestal forever merely by playing this recording in public. Yet she had taken all the sacred oaths of the governorship of Beeren. Those oaths matched the ones shared by most of the elder houses, which included keeping any secret under the royal seal, and the entire Chamber of Treasures was under such a seal. If Lady Carice exposed this recording and let Princess Leia's true parentage be known, she would have broken her sacred vow. She would have betrayed the royal seal. It would be the same as saying that nobility meant nothing.
But Princess Leia is a liar and a fraud. She's kept this secret from everyone all these years. Didn't we deserve to know?
Then again, perhaps the princess didn't even know the truth. Bail Organa had probably never had the chance to tell his daughter any of this, since the recording made it clear he thought it would be dangerous for her to seek her brother before the end of the war. Somehow, Princess Leia had learned his identity, and her mother's too, which implied she knew the truth about her father as well. But that implication was far from proof. It took only a few moments for Lady Carice to make her decision. Nobility was more important than rabble-rousing. A royal seal had to remain inviolate. She could fulfill her oath and keep this secret, maybe even from Princess Leia herself. However, she intended to hold on to the chest and its contents, just in case.